David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 449. I'm your host, Steve Raker, charting the stars down the comic book bunker with Andrew the LA Rabbit and Whirlwind X Kevin, because in this episode, we get all cosmic.
Are we from another universe?
If you're charting the stars from your basement, I'm a bit concerned about the rest of your house.
That's where the big table is that we can spread the maps out on.
Can we flip the map over?
Marvel, don't look at the backside. That's on a need-to-know basis only. Marvel Noise is the Marvel-centric semi-monthly podcast that's proudly sponsored by nobody. We've been facing front for over 17 years thanks to Derek Coward's Deliberate Noise Network, where you can find other fine podcasts, including Indie Comic Book Noise, our sister show where we talk indie comics and swear and stuff. This episode, we've got a feature that Kevin's been lobbying for a while now. We're taking a look at the first appearances of each of Galactus's heralds. In order of service, not publication history, which is usually how we roll, but, you know, I think this would better serve the fictional history. So, upward and onward.
Fictional. Wait, I thought this was all real stuff, Stephen. So one of these alternate Earths somewhere.
All right. I was trying to make us all trendy by, you know, covering some of that future cosmic Fantastic Four-ish stuff.
Oh, there'll be plenty of Fantastic Four. All right, Andrew, who is this Galactus anyway?
He's a big guy that eats planets. He's pretty cool. I always enjoy the evolution of Galactus. While I'm old, I'm not that old that I got his first appearance off the rack, but I really appreciate the look, even though I know it's a little dated. And lately, I've been watching some Sword and Sandal epics, and I realize he owes kind of a lot of his design, I feel like, to the classic Roman Centurion type. With the battle skirt and the elaborate headdress and everything. Just a great look, man. The big G.
And what do we mean, heralds, Kevin?
Dudes that he tricks into serving him to do his bidding.
Find the planets so that he can be signaled and cruise right over to them and ingest them in the way that he does.
Yeah, obviously, he doesn't want to do that whole bit himself. He likes to break out all that equipment, right? He has a massive home.
Maybe he could like offer bounties or something. Ooh. You know, like, hey, 100 space credits if you find your planet. Dial my hotline 1-800-GALACTUS.
It was all Kirby's idea. Stan was like, "Who's that guy?" And I had to go along with it. So oddly enough, we start in 2004 and end in 2006, even though we're going to span the modern Marvel Universe's publishing history here. The first Herald of Galactus was the Fallen One, introduced in Thanos 11 and 12 of 12 from June and July 2004, written by Keith Giffen with art by Ron Lim and Alan Milgram.
One of the things I love about these projects is I never read this series, so I fire up almost everything's going to be on the Unlimited, except for a few, very few links. But so I look at issue 11 and start it, and I'm like, oh, it's part of a series. So I'll go back and then I look, I'm like, well, the whole series is only 12 issues. So, so I started with like issue 11, then jump back to 6 and then jump back to 1. So, like, it's only 12 issues. So I can unreservedly recommend, if you have the time, to read the whole all whopping 12 issues. It was kind of fun. And like I said, it was just funny that I kept going back and back and back.
Yeah, the first six issues were Jim Starlin, but then his britches got burned and he left the book and Marvel. And Keith Giffen started with issue 7 doing a 6-issue arc where Thanos is in the Kiln prison near the Crunch at the end of the universe, where he encounters Gladiator and Peter Quill.
This is so weird that there's like prequel Annihilation, Guardians of the Galaxy type of stuff in here.
Right? He's adamantly post-Star-Lord here. And the Fallen is a hunter-seeker, the first herald of Galactus, and Galactus cast it out when he learned of its doings. And Star-Lord brought the Fallen in, and it was incarcerated at the Kiln here, and escaped when this pod lost its power. His cage was basically released during Thanos's battle on the Kiln. So Gladiator conscripts Star-Lord to the Imperial Guard to get the Fallen. And the Fallen is this sleek-bodied alien, kind of like the Surfer, but ebony, and he's got, like, long Fabio hair.
So, And if you were wondering what happened with the Beyonder, too, Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was. That was one of the things I was definitely thinking of, too.
I mean, not the Beyonder, the character from the Spider-Ham universe, but the Beyonder.
She was also imprisoned there when she made herself be flesh. But Galactus does what he does because he must, right? He's a force of nature. But this Fallen guy, this first herald, he revels in the pain and the suffering and commits atrocities. Also, Star-Lord's whacked. Like, he's got a cybernetic eye and visible metal, like, cable muscles in his neck and his arm, and he cites that he's got this memory chip in his head that gives him perfect memory and stuff. So he is a very different Star-Lord than the Star-Lord we knew and the Star-Lord we would become to know, if that makes any sense.
I think we talked about those magazine appearances, Steve.
Oh, yeah, those original ones, sure.
On Marvel Noise, yeah. So always a bit of a kooky character from that end of it.
And Kevin and I did the deep dive into the Abnett Lanning Guardians way back
when.
Well, the Fallen One wants to kill a weakened, regenerating Galactus, but Thanos gets in the way. And Fallen One's power, he draws from dark matter rather than from power cosmic. So, like, the Fallen One and Thanos fight and all. And Thanos' ship is destroyed in the process. Thanos ultimately throws the Fallen One into a gas giant and then ignites it, which takes the Fallen One down. Then it's weird. He enslaves the Fallen One and steals his black matter. It's unclear kind of how it's all resolved, but how it's left there. But we wouldn't see the Fallen One again until the Annihilation event 2 years later, where the Fallen One meets his demise, but he's Thanos' herald in that. How pretty kooky. But more on Annihilation as our chronology endpoint later. So that's the Fallen One. Second Herald of Galactus was unknown. Just the Herald from 1582, who was in S.H.I.E.L.D. number 1 from April 2010, written by Jonathan Hickman, with art by Dustin Weaver.
I was pretty excited about this series and totally lost in interest. Like, two really great creators, but I think sometimes stitching all that stuff together doesn't, I think I like more open questions, like Galactus showing up every, well, he's going to start showing up every few years, but way back then, and then, I don't know, sometimes I feel stitching together can make the world feel smaller in a way I don't like. And but I mean, no knock. I mean, these are two of the, you know, great comic book creative types. I think that this didn't work for me. And I don't even know if I finished all whopping six issues or whatever. Should probably read them all. Maybe
together. It's in a hardcover, but I think the reason you might have not read of all the issues was because the delays in the series.
That was the second one, though, right? The second six that had the big delays. But anyway,
I was going to say the Roy Thomasing of Andrew is going to bring that up again.
I thought it was clever, though.
All Roy Thomas.
Yeah, he tries to explain how, well, there's 10 lost days in 1582 because that's when the calendar shifted. Right. When we changed to the modern calendar, and in the process, 10 calendar days got lost. And Hickman here in the Marvel universe is explaining those 10 days as being like a cover up from an attack by Galactus at that time, led by this unknown herald that isn't named and isn't really shown up close and is just shown in one panel and is never mentioned again. But the attack is repelled by Galileo and the Brotherhood of the Shield, which is like an ancestral precursor of Shield.
This is so wild. And then to have Dustin Weaver doing all this like intricate artwork, and it's just so wild.
The third Herald of Galactus is the Silver Surfer, one of my favorite characters from Fantastic Four 48. Through 50, making his first appearance in December 1965 to February 1966, written by Stanley and Jack Kirby, with art by Jack Kirby and Joe Sinnott. And this is not just the first appearance of the Silver Surfer, but the first appearance of Galactus and even the concept of him having a herald. Surfer's
really fun. On the Unlimited, I read these off the Marvel CD books they put out a while ago. And also just great because it's slotted right into a story. Like, it starts with wrapping up the previous story.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Yep.
Have that neat, like, we're blocking every story for a trade type of thing. It's right in the, you know, you get the messy conclusion of that. And then, you know, we got to dive right into who's this mysterious silver guy floating through the air. And the Watcher looks a lot more ripped than he does later. The Surfer, like, a Watcher could be babyish or big bulky dude.
The Surfer's first observed heading towards Earth by a Skrull warship, and it's implied that the Surfer's been Galactus's herald for a long time because it's in the Skrull's cosmic history books.
There we go.
Fantastic Four encounter skies full of fire and try to deal with both the chaos on the ground and investigating the cause. All the while, the Surfer gets closer, ever closer. The skies change to space debris, and the Watcher appears and explains. The Surfer arrives, and the Fantastic Four confront him, but they're too late to stop him from signaling Galactus. But the thing punches the Silver Surfer off the roof anyway.
And one of the classic Kirby photo collage pages.
Awesome.
I should have looked that up on the Unlimited to see how it reproduces. I know tend to like the print with those, but yeah.
It looks newsprinty, like the collage part of it, which is kind of cool. The Watcher tries to reason with Galactus to spare Earth, but is unsuccessful. The Fantastic Four can't fight Galactus. They're totally outmatched. So the Watcher sends the Human Torch off on a secret mission. Meanwhile, after falling from the Thing's punch and staggering off, the Surfer ends up on the couch of the Thing's blind sculptor's girlfriend, Alicia Masters, and she senses a noble spirit within him and nurses him back to being alert, and in the process, her kindness is a catalyst for the Surfer to find Earthlings worthwhile, and therefore Earth is also worthwhile, and he chooses to betray his master.
Yeah, this one's a classic for a reason.
So the Surfer entombs Galactus in solid matter, but Galactus just breaks free, and he's targeting the Silver Surfer, but what it is doing is buying time for the Human Torch to retrieve the ultimate nullifier from Galactus's ship at the Watcher's direction, And with the nullifier in Reed's hand, it's a stalemate. Except for the whole matter of the Surfer, who Galactus again alters. This time he strips him of his ability to soar the space ways and traps him on Earth. The Surfer's origin would be revealed 2 years later in Silver Surfer number 1 from May 1968 by Stan and John Buscema and Joe Sinnott, where we learn that the Surfer was once a man named Norrin Rad from a scientifically advanced planet Zenla with his love Shalabal and all. And when Galactus comes to Zenla, he makes the bargain, right? And becomes Galactus's first, as it was at the time, herald. And they even touch at in that Silver Surfer issue on how his soul was changed to enable him to the task, which is a bit that they'd expand on, you know, way much later on in the 90s, once the Surfer is free during his, space traveling era.
I think Galactus would have used that trick a lot more in the
traveling era. He does.
He's got a lot more heralds that are going to come up, and some of them are pretty crummy people. I mean, not people, but alien people.
People.
Yeah, like alien types, but they're people.
Into the 70s we go here with the fourth herald, the Airwalker. Well, the fourth and fifth, actually. This is a weird one because there were two, but the second was introduced almost 10 years before the first that supposedly the second was based on. Confused? Because I sure was as a kid. I was really confused.
The Punisher. That always confused me. You'd be reading like the, not the Marvel handbook, whatever I was reading, and then I'd be like, wait, Punisher robot? And then it would be like, hashtag, not that Punisher.
One of Galactus's robots. So the Airwalker, either of them, first appears in Fantastic Four 120 from December 1971. The Horror That Walks on Air by Stan Lee, John Buscema, and Joe Sinnott. Agatha Harkness warns the Fantastic Four of the impending threat to mankind this time. She's like taking the place of the Watcher here. It was totally evocative of the Watcher warning of the Surfer coming, but this time it's Gabriel the Airwalker walking on air without emotion, eyes without mercy. He's just walking, but it's so menacing.
I like how they're gonna work some of the elements in, but always struck me as like a guy that travels through space called Airwalker doesn't really maybe some other thing, but I guess, hey, you know, the Surfer went too fast, so maybe get a guy that walks more.
Fantastic Four engage him, and seriously, true believers, they try to impress him, but nothing can make this guy pause or react or like possibly even blink. I always dug Gabriel's design with his like fur shawl of cosmic fire thing and the little vents on the back of his Achilles tendons shooting the little jets or exhaust or what, who knows, out of him. Dude is
cool. His herald trick of the horn is pretty cool. Blow your horn.
Yeah, I mean, he only fights back when the military attacks him, and then he produces a horn to blow because, I mean, mythology demands it, right? But he says when he does blow it, it'll signal the end of mankind.
Didn't the Gabe from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. also play the
horn? Yep.
I feel like they really work that motif anytime you got a guy with that name. Why not? Blow that horn. It looks cool because it's like the cornucopia curly style horn, French horn almost.
Looks like something all the fancy Namor vowels would pull out, you know?
Yeah. To summon some creature.
The Fantastic Four are pretty ineffective against him, but you know who isn't? The Silver Surfer. He fights Gabriel and rips his cosmic coat cape thing off. And he's like, no, that's the source of my power. And he crashes to the ground and breaks apart in pieces. He was a robot, Kevin.
What?
But he did manage to blow his horn.
Dumb Dugan.
And guess who the horn signaled? Galactus. So the next two issues are a whole lot of fun, but they don't involve the Airwalker at all. The Surfer helps the Fantastic Four fight Galactus, and it's that whole Galactus in the amusement park romp where Galactus is like a big kaiju crashing through like the Ferris wheel and stuff. And this time it's Reed who sneaks aboard Galactus's ship and commandeers it and holds it hostage in exchange for Earth.
And I like the depiction of angry Galactus. Like, that's a cool man. Luckily, they should have. It would be decades before they'd find the solution to mellow Galactus out. But yeah, that will be in our honorary mentions.
Well, he might have been comfy Galactus. And then you bugged him, and he's just like, he's not having it.
You still have the big treasury, that edition that collected these issues. One of the few things that survived the fire back in the day. So the broken parts of the Airwalker scattered on the ground end up in the hands of the Machine Smith, who pit it and some other bots against Captain America in Captain America 249 from June 1980 during the Stern Burn run on Cap. But that's not it for the Airwalker. Almost 10 years later from his original appearance, so it's December 1980, we learn a lot more in Thor 305 to 306 by Mark Gruenwald and Ralph Macchio, with art by Keith Poehler, Chick Stone, Dave Simmons, and Marie Severin. In 305, the robot Airwalker wakes up in the Machine Smith's lair, but he's got the consciousness of a man who was Gabriel, now trapped in a machine. And he befriends and basically abducts a nearby boy and then visits the Fantastic Four. He wants a meeting with the Silver Surfer within the hour or he'll destroy the city. And the kid's like, wow, cool. You ever see Gladiator movie, Billy? Thor engages Gabriel and separates him from the kid. And Gabriel, he's able to actually wield Mjolnir and whack Thor with it. Wanting to keep Galactus from eating inhabited planets, I guess, makes him noble enough.
Then well, Thor, some of those guys were pretty cool. I mean, at this point, you know, Galactus veers from picking decent people to picking the absolute worst. So, you know, it's a nice mix-up.
Thor throws Mjolnir through Gabriel, destroying the machinery within him, and the kid's like, I hate you, Thor! Which gods hate when people hate them. Then in 306, Fire Lord, just go with it, we'll get to him next. Fire Lord's chilling in the desert in Saudi Arabia, eating grapes. No exaggeration. And sees news reports on the television about Thor and the Airwalker and rushes there, but he's too late. Then he seeks revenge on Thor, despite their history. Again, we'll get to that next. And claims he's slain the one he loved most in life, so Thor must die. And fight they do. In the end, Fire Lord reveals that he and Gabriel were Xandarians serving in the Nova Corps. And Gabriel was the captain and Fire Lord was the second in command when Gabriel was abducted by Galactus to be his herald, transformed into the first Airwalker, and actually became Galactus's friend until he was killed by some alien race, the Ovoids, who were resisting Galactus's presence. So Galactus then made a robot, but the consciousness never was right. So the thing was just soulless until the reboot in the Machine Smith lair. Kevin, he just needed to unplug him and plug him back in.
Wow. You know, that solves like 50% of your troubles, so.
Well, you know, the Machine Smith, clearly better at robots than Galactus. Galactus' heart wasn't really in it. He just, you know, hits a few buttons and that's good enough. But the Machine Smith, he gets robots.
Well, Galactus' fingers are really big, so there's that. But Fire Lord, who was still in the Nova Corps, never stopped searching for his friend. And found Galactus after the events of Fantastic Four 120 to 124 and became Galactus's next herald, Firestorm, in exchange for information on the fate of his friend, which then had to be wiped from his mind, of course. But here Firestorm can finally lay his friend to rest on an asteroid near the Xandarian system. Speaking of
Firestorm.
Speaking of fire. Oh, right. I said Firestorm, didn't I? Fire Lord. I think I said Firestorm a few times.
I think so.
But speaking of Fire Lord or Firestorm, but I'm meaning Fire Lord. He is the fifth Herald of Galactus, and his first appearance was 6 years earlier, back in Thor 225. And his service would end in that same arc in Thor 228, where we'd get Galactus's next Herald. Thor 225 to 228 ran from April to July 1974 by Jerry Conway, with art by John Buscema and Joe Sinnott. John Buscema and Mike Esposito and Rich Buckler and Joe Sinnott. With a lot of Kirby swipes.
Back up that first page. You open that comic up and I'm like, yeah, I want to see what's going on here.
After a battle with the
Destroyer's holding Thor's hammer.
Yeah. Boom. After a battle with the Asgardian Destroyer, a fiery being called Fire Lord seeks out Thor. As Don Blake, without regard for the hospital that he's in. And Hercules fights him, and then Thor fights him, but Fire Lord calls his master, and his master is Galactus, who comes cruising in his convertible.
You know, sometimes a ship, you know, you want something more relaxed for tooling around the galaxy.
I love the panel,
too. He doesn't have a cool... Like, he just has his signal is lame compared to Gabriel. Like, all the heralds need better, fancier ways to signal Galactus.
I like this panel of Galactus opining about having to go to Earth. He's like, two Earthling years have passed since I strode on that scummy surface of that sickly world. So Galactus has come to Earth because he seeks Thor's assistance. And sure, the Olympian can help too. Ego, the living planet, has gone mad, and Galactus wants Hercules, Thor, and Fire Lord to help him destroy it. So they assault Ego and battle a lot of monsters on its surface and everything, but Thor takes this, like, mind trip into Ego and learns of Ego's origin as Project World Core. Then in the end, he's lobotomized by Thor and attached to a one-way rocket by Galactus and just sent off into space.
Hercules had a... The problem was the mace versus the hammer. Like, I feel like that's where he loses the thing.
You know, you've been podcasting with someone for 20 years, when you know they're going to mention the mace.
Love that. And it had the same ridiculous short handle too. Like, they're pretty similar, you know, but Thor makes it work. Poor Hercules.
Maybe he should have had a Morningstar instead.
He didn't even bring the mace on this whole trip, so.
The arc ends with Fire Lord requesting his freedom and Galactus allowing it if they find a suitable replacement, which Thor does. Bringing the arc full circle by giving Galactus the mindless Asgardian Destroyer armor to transform into his next herald.
That's weird.
So although his run is short-lived, we'd see the Asgardian Destroyer be Galactus's sixth herald. 2 years later, in the spring-summer of 1976, we'd see him in Fantastic Four, 172 to 173, locating Counter-Earth and setting up a big showdown as the Fantastic Four and the High Evolutionary fight to save it. Then Loki would steal the Asgardian Destroyer armor from Galactus, which would end its service and close the circle of these interconnected heralds after the Silver Surfer of the 1970s.
Well, as everyone knows, I'm a huge fan of paper comics. I have to say, these early Thors, though, with Ego, and the colors are lots of fun because it's very, like you say, the Ego mind trip and space and crazy colors and explosions and everything. So I did not view these in print, but they look real good on the Unlimited. So
yep,
kids, run out and check it out. It's fun to see it really kind of glows in a way that's nice. I mean, I still love paper, don't get me wrong, but these are good ones for digi conversion.
Eagles, flora and fauna always have, you know, like anachronistic colors and stuff, so you get a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, yeah, it looks like a crazy place to live, Steve. I'm not going to lie.
Terax the Tamer would serve next, and first appeared as part of my beloved Search for Galactus arc in Fantastic Four 204 to 214 from December 1978 to October 1979. What an epic. I was 8 and then 9 years old, turned 9 during this epic. I mean, it tied up elements from the canceled Nova series. You got the Fantastic Four being hit by the Skrull aging ray, the creation of Herbie the Robot in the comics, Dr. Sun making his move and taking over Herbie the Robot, the Search for Galactus, the first time we'd see Galactus in like 2 years of real time, and the introduction of Terax, and the crazy physical battle between the Sphinx and Galactus, all written by Marv Wolfman with art by Pollard, Sal Buscema, Joe Sinnott, but mostly John Byrne and Joe Sinnott. Terax makes
and you
his
also
first...
have the great mail-in ad for the gold-colored Cylon Centurion leader from Mattel. God, those toys were terrible, but I really liked them.
Yep, ditto.
The vehicles were not in scale to the figures, which is a terrible idea, people, let me tell you. But why not, you know? So they had all kinds of goofy size issues and everything, but great, great toys for a weird TV show. But yeah, these I'm back on the CD, so enjoying all that stuff. And what an epic, too. And these ones hold up pretty well in print. Again, did not see the digi versions.
Terax makes his first appearance in issues 211 to 213 when the Fantastic Four need Galactus's help against the Sphinx and his cursed Ka Stone. But he's only willing to help if they go scout out one of his Herald prospects, a dude named Tyros the Terrible. And once they're on his planet, the FF get captured and they're brought to Tyros's throne room. They break free, of course, and they collect Tyros for Galactus, who acknowledges his previous heralds being of water, air, and fire, and transforms Tyros into Terax the Tamer, a being of rock with a cosmic axe that controls all other rock. A proud monarch on his flying throne of stone. He is the master of the rock and loam. He is the molder of the mountains and the marl. Wolfman really lays it on thick. 1,000 meteors will bend the course to serve his whim. With his cosmic axe in hand, Terax is invincible, for with this axe he can cleave the cosmic stratum itself.
Well, okay. Now we're going to definitely lock in, like, most of the Heralds have some gimmick, a tool, an accessory that comes with their toy, and that's really been locked in. So I like that we're now, this is the axe, and so now it's going forward. Fire Lord did have the staff, but he had some weird ones like the Destroyer, and Gabriel, you know, I guess the little cape thing, but I think that was more for the robot than it was for him. But now we're going to have, like, you have a Herald, what's your, like a wrestler, like, what's your gimmick? This guy's got the axe, which is a very cool design, like a futuristic axe, I feel like. Not like an old battle axe type double-headed executioner style thing.
I'm a golden axe.
Terax immediately betrays and attacks his master, who reduces him to a worm and then dust before restoring him. And then Terax bends his knee and is like, oh, command me, Galactus. I live to serve your every whim, right? Then in issue 213, while Galactus and the Sphinx are duking it out, Terax attacks a now elderly Reed and Ben, but the torch is still useful, and he traps an overheated Terax in a liquid oxygen shell until the Earth is saved. If you've never read this arc, really, you should do so. It's a lot of fun.
I do like how the torch is still useful, because he's not useful normally. Plus, you get an appearance by Robo Dugan, so always valuable to have a robot ally who doesn't know he's a robot.
Terax eventually returned to the pages of the Fantastic Four in 242 and 243 from February and March of 1982 by John Byrne, leading Galactus on a chase to Earth after stealing his stored power, Cosmic, leaving Galactus depleted for the whole Reed must save Galactus bit, right? And during this, Galactus takes all his power, Cosmic, back from Terax, leaving him powerless as Tyros again, something he hadn't done to any of his heralds. When Galactus is restored, however, he's again in need of a herald, maybe more so than ever, because he's in this vulnerable, weakened state. So in Fantastic Four 244, in April 1982, the Human Torch's girlfriend, Frankie Ray, herself a Human Torch, a female Torch, having been doused in a chemical accident in her father's lab, he was the creator of the original android Human Torch, she steps up and offers her service, making a surfer-like deal, breaking Johnny's heart. But she becomes Galactus's eighth herald, Nova.
And she must have read this at the time, and I vaguely remember it, but it's so weird. Like, this is, you know, right in a big moment in the Fantastic Four.
Oh, yeah.
But it made almost no impression on me, which is
really
weird, because I like John Byrne a lot, and I like this. I think maybe it's that the Frankie Ray character I didn't have much investment in. So it wasn't like, you know, Mary Jane or Gwen, like someone, or even Alicia Mass, like one of the more established, even Crystal, I think I felt more like she just kind of felt like, oh, yeah, this is this girl. I mean, maybe I should take his relationships more serious.
I felt like it was almost like a Jean Grey sacrifice thing. Like, you know, there goes another great redhead.
I think that's what they were going for, but I guess maybe I'm too emotionally shallow, or I just didn't feel like
I really thought it was
the love of his life being lost, or whatever.
She always existed like under other writers, like back from Len Wein and other things, and she like would come in and out. Different writers would use her and mention her as an on again, off again girlfriend, and then it was Byrne who like made sense out of her and connected her to Phineas Horton and all that stuff, and made her a female Torch and made them have this romance, all for her to give up her humanity.
I think I might have also liked her more as the Herald than I did in retrospect. Like, I feel there was a lot of cool stories with her as a herald, and also to see someone not be a heel but also to enjoy it was a fun twist that they hadn't done.
She's like, so far they're either angsty
or they're jerks, so it was nice to have like, oh, here's a herald that's not, you know, pulling their hair out, nor is a complete heel.
No, everybody wins but Johnny in this.
He'll be fine, maybe. It's but my whole
she's I'm for a long time
Spider-Man though. Over Johnny.
She serves for like 10 plus years of real time. Pretty impressive. Also, there's a few honorable mentions during Terax's time in service. First, in Dazzler number 10 and 11 from August and September 1981, written by Danny Fingeroth with art by Frank Springer and Vinnie Coletta. We'll never know what those Frank Springer pencils look like.
There were a few panels where you see a close-up on her face, and I'm like, oh, there's the Vinnie Coletta from Romance Comics everyone talked about. Like,
Dazzler gets...
Well, he does the pretty girl face really well.
Well, yeah, and Frank Springer actually was a good penciler. Just, you know, gets covered up by Coletta's minimalism. But the Dazzler gets drafted by Galactus to fetch Terax, who's betrayed him once again and fled through a black hole. And it turns out Dazzler's mutant powers to turn sound into light give her an advantage passing through and surviving in the black hole. But she's totally overmatched against Terax. But Galactus's monitor drone servant dude sends a beam of sound to power her up, and she was able to overcome Terax. The issue ends with Terax back in Galactus's service with a new target, the planet Galador. And then 2 months later, In ROM 27 from November 1981 by Bill Mantlow, Sal Buscema, and Joe Sinnott, ROM is briefly enlisted as Galactus' herald to spare ROM's home planet of Galador and lead him to a new world. But ROM, as we've discussed before on the show when we cover these issues, pulls a fast one and leads him to the Dire Wrath's mystical nebula, where he becomes distracted for a while, let's say. Unconsumable.
Crazy to think, like, that it's a planet Galactus can't eat. And I mean, really, like, you said he had problems with ego. Like, this thing, the Dark World just about kills him. That was really fun jump over from, like, it's nice that it threads through Dazzler, which is, may I say, like, an insane series, by the way.
Yeah.
Especially when you think its prominence and helping to establish the direct market. Like, what a crazy kind of book to pick. But but these ROMs, I really liked. I don't know, I think that it's a perfect kind of Bill Mantlow's ability to write like really short stories in a way is fun for me, especially when you take big characters like Galactus or whatever, because he tells so much in like one, like this is one issue and you get this whole range of it. I really liked it.
He's written so-
this one I had to go, not on the unlimited, but you can buy reader copies really cheap.
He's written so many different characters too, Mantlow. Even he was the guy who wrote just like fill-in issues for different comics for a while. So he really has a good grasp of the characterization of lots of different characters and around the Marvel Universe too.
And the army of Galadorian space knights. Sadly, Parker Brothers didn't produce any of them. But the rich world of... Man, every time I see that ROM toy, I'm always somewhat fascinated, but it looks like a real hunk of junk. But I never had one as a kid, so I'm kind of like, do I want a ROM toy?
I knew someone who had one.
Look pretty useless.
Terrible. Yeah, terrible.
So yeah, did they play with them or just use it like twice and that was
how,
it? Like,
how would you play with it?
Well, he's got lights and makes noises. Yeah.
Okay, so you can turn it on and turn it off.
I don't know, maybe he can summon the new warriors to defeat Darax again.
I can't wait for the Marvel Legends one coming out in June.
I do have that ordered. I'm a sucker. Anyway, sorry, Steve.
Me
back
too.
To important issues.
Yeah, and especially this one. Our final honorable mention goes out to Aunt May, who in the Assistant Editor's Month, issue 137 of Marvel Team-Up in 1983, served Galactus as the Golden Oldie, in a takeoff on the hostess Twinkie ads of the day.
Yeah, what's funny is the ROM comic, this is the other one, has a hostess, it's not Twinkie, it's Fruit Pie, but it has a hostess ad in it. So it's fun that it's still like a thing as of this day. And this one I remembered a lot. For some reason, that Assistant Editor's Month was a great gimmick because a lot of it stuck in your head in a way that, you know, for a guy that read a lot of comics that I enjoyed but didn't memorize or have that memorable, like the assistant editor stuff, some of them really worked in a goofy way. And this is one. This is great. One, I mean, come on, a giant Twinkie.
It was written by Mike Carlin, who would later become a successful DC editor-in-chief, with art by Greg LaRocque and Mike Esposito, the longtime anchor on Marvel Team-Up, where Galactus loves the Twinkies and she finds him a planet-sized one. Then Peter Parker wakes up. It was all a dream. Then writer-editor Danny Fingeroth wakes up, realizing, it was just a dream. Then editor-in-chief Jim Shooter wakes up. It was all a dream. Then Stan Lee wakes up. It's a pretty funny ending. Anyway. So Frankie Ray...
I like that they give Jim Shooter a stuffed Garfield that he sleeps with, too. He has clutched to his chest when he wakes up.
Frankie Ray, as we said, would last a while as Galactus's herald, befriending and having many adventures and even an on-again, off-again romance with the Silver Surfer, which brings us to the Herald Ordeal arc from the Silver Surfer 70 to 75 in June to November 1992, written by Ron Mars, with art by M.C. Wyman and Ron Lim and Tom Christopher. And we get Galactus's ninth herald, Morg.
Yeah, this is one of those early comics that I read. Has something about this. Well, I think I was reading a few issues before. I got a few issues of Infinity War, maybe, or was that Gauntlet? I
don't know.
Man, I had forgotten these issues until I read it. It was so awesome. I'm like, wait, this is from... Whoa, I've read this before. I hadn't thought of this comic in 30 years.
Yeah.
This was a lot of fun. It was a nice, like... That's the other thing I like about this. Sometimes you'll assign something, and I'll have forgotten that I read it, and I'm reading it, and I'm like, wait, yeah. I know this story. This is a great story.
But I don't know if Frankie Ray wouldn't have been in many comics that I've read, but maybe through the cards and, you know, all the other... stuff that you sort of just absorb knowledge through. You're just like, oh, maybe that'll be an interesting story. Also, it's a big G. Like, I gotta check that out.
Galactus confronts Nova regarding her passing over suitable planets for uninhabited ones and lying to him about it. So he devours an inhabited planet, but takes a warrior court executioner called Morg and makes Morg his next herald. A bigger battle axe that's more like a battlefield axe, I would say. Like you were saying, Terex is
ironically, wasn't... he is an executioner. So
right,
yeah.
An executioner's axe. And yeah, because when you just listed out as Morg, I'm like, Morg? But then when I read it, I'm like, oh yeah, this guy. Yeah, this was a fun one. Because he's one of the real jerky ones.
Yeah,
it's always, you know, not one of the nice ones or one of the neutral angsty ones. He's just a big jerk.
Yeah, he wails on the surfer without difficulty, and then he commits genocidal atrocities on planets before he signals Galactus. Right. So like he just toys with Galactus's food. He plays with Galactus's food. Yeah. And Galactus
You could say he's making sure Galactus isn't having problems when he gets there. You know, he's doing the field work ahead of time.
Yeah. Galactus dismisses Nova.
Just like, get this into my belly.
And also notable is in Silver Surfer 71 and 72, Nebula goes from being the walking vegetable that she was post-Infinity Gauntlet to being bald with cybernetics as she'd be known since and in the movies.
Yeah, that's so weird.
I thought you'd like that, Kevin.
So I know, who knew? Like, that's one of those things where later on, like, you read it, but then later on you didn't realize how important something like that was.
To oppose Morg, the surfer recruits Fire Lord and Nova, while Morg seeks out the Well of Life and greatly increases his powers by bathing in it. The trio of heralds then uses their cosmic powers to resurrect the Airwalker robot in Silver Surfer 73, and Terax is recruited in issue 74, so the whole team of heralds is assembled. In Silver Surfer 75, they face off against Morg, and then the surfer is sent to recruit Galactus, which goes pretty poorly at first. But Galactus does eventually assist, stripping Morg of his power cosmic, but he's still left with all the power from the well, though. And Terax burns Morg's flesh off his bones, but not before Morg kills Nova.
And what?
The issue ends with a sparkle being seen in Morg's skull's eye orbit, and Nova's cosmic Viking funeral into a raging sun.
Yeah, really, I like this one. Read this little, six issues or whatever it is. This is a good, like, a summation. I mean, there's one plot twist when Nova, she first gets dismissed from Galactus that seems nonsensical, but once you skip that plot point, it's really fun from there on, and good to see them team up. Also, as much as I like the surfer, it's good to see him once in a while get taken down a little bit when he's like, I'm the best herald ever. And then bam, Morg just slaps the heck out of him. So, you know, every once in a while.
You can't enjoy that foil cover that well, though.
No, it doesn't seem to. It doesn't seem scanned. I think I did not go looking, but I'm like, I think I do have that 75 somewhere. I should have dug it out, but I was busy reading it on the thing, and you go from one to the next. And it was so good. I was like, I can't, I'm not stopping to go find the print. I got to keep going. I got to find out what happens. Even though, obviously, I read this in 1992 or whatever.
Galactus's 10th Herald was Redshift, who's introduced in the second issue of the Galactus the Devourer limited series from the summer and fall of 1999 by Louise Simonson, John Buscema, and Bill Sienkiewicz, although the character actually cameoed on the last panel of issue one, one of those deals, Kevin, which was penciled by John J. Muth, who, it's important, though, because John designed Redshift, even though he just appeared in that one panel at the end of his issue. And years ago, I asked John Muth about designing this Herald, and he said, and going back to what you were saying, Andrew, is he noted that the previous Heralds, you know, all have their cool weaponry, and he's like, no one's had a sword yet. So he designed a Herald around being a swordsman and made a swordsman character. Here, dual swords. Cosmic powered dual swords.
Yeah, go ahead, Kevin, sorry.
These are expensive issues, but, you know, I had to have some of them. And then I went back and, you know, filled it in later.
I read the entire thing on the Unlimited because it was only six issues. I like the Redshift character and the design and the look. Has almost like a, kind of reminds me of like a Bedouin swordsman or something like that.
Sure.
But Redshift, the name, because of it's like one of those goofy flashbacks or something.
Yeah.
Like, I wish the name was that kind of thing, but I do like the character. It's fun. And again, it's another one of these, except this guy, his whole gimmick is while he's also a total heel, he's also way into Galactus, like unhealthily into Galactus, like, dude, maybe, you know, give him a little space type of thing. And because I was out of comics at this time, I didn't know about like Alicia's power armor and all that weird stuff, but it was a fun, fun couple of issues. Watch it. And some really good fights too. You know, obviously some great visuals with this team.
That Alicia armor thing was just part of this series. Nothing
it works for this one.
Nothing else is known about this Redshift Herald. He goes toe-to-toe with the Surfer the whole issue, but the rest of the series is pretty much about Galactus, and Redshift doesn't really show back up until Annihilation, where he also meets his end. Galactus's 11th Herald is the Invisible Boy. What? From Fantastic Four 519 and 520 in the fall of 2004 by Mark Waid, Mike Waringo, and Carl Kesel.
Invisible Boy seems suspicious.
This is a weird one.
Are you guys going to sat now? What I don't recall was, did the Fantastic Four sites do the Waid Waringo Fantastic Four run?
I don't think so. I don't believe we did.
What?
Well, wasn't sure, because I'm not super familiar with this run of the four. I was getting back in, but I don't think I was reading them at this time.
Bunch of planets use cloaking tech to make their planets invisible to Galactus for protection, but they fear that he might use the Invisible Girl to uninvisible them, let's say, so they want to kill him. And Reed instead uses a device to strip her of her powers. But really, it swapped her powers with the Human Torch. So now he's got the invisibility powers, and Galactus recruits him to be his 11th Herald, the Invisible Boy. In the Rising Storm arc through 520 to 524, Johnny has to deal with the good and bad of being a Herald, from like, wow, all this stuff is amazing, to what have I become, right? He like a lot of the other good Heralds, he tries to lead Galactus to uninhabited worlds, but it's like he's got the Parker luck. He can't find uninhabited ones. He gets caught. And then the ending is too weird. Like, Johnny helps find info for the Fantastic Four and Quasar to build this cannon that strips Galactus of the power Cosmic and turns him mortal again back into Galen. And I pretend it never happened, just like Marvel did afterwards. But like, it's like Galen goes to New York and like, you know, goes shopping with the thing. And I don't know. It's terrible.
I just had that whole cue ball. Had that whole like Beyonder 2 vibe to it.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's a storyline like, we wanted to bring back.
It felt like well, he was John Lithgow from Third Rock to the Sun, like eating the cue ball at the pool hall. And it was just so silly.
Steve, sometimes you're a star. Sometimes you're a human eating some New York hot dogs. It's just what happens eventually.
But I like that they do have an ad for the Spider-Man CD-ROM comics in the last issue. That tickled me. And I didn't know Underoos were still around as of this time, but
they came back.
Wade's writing is, there's like a slickness to it and everything, but this one, like, it flows well, but I don't know. It was a little there was something about it that didn't work.
Yeah. For me.
It was totally ridiculous.
Yeah,
that's what didn't work for me. It was totally ridiculous. And I liked using Johnny as the everyman to have like these big decisions. And, you know, they play a little bit on, you know, some big ethical questions and stuff. But at the same time, it was.
Well, it also made sense for them to appreciate the other's plights. Like Sue's like, oh, it's hard to be the torch. And
They're
all like, oh, having everybody's power different is a real but then drag. They do it
again because the whole arc ends with all of their powers going to four unrelated people in the city, right? So just like it just goes on. Anyway.
I did think the blurbs were pretty effective in the inside panel. Like I was like, oh, that's a good
yes.
That was a good catch up. And I know Kevin doesn't like it because it didn't spoil the comic, but I liked it.
Showing what happens each issue is a good help.
Yeah, it's a good way to be like, oh, if you're just grabbing it, because it helped me jump right in and be like, oh, here's the status quo and what's going on, because I don't remember. Because this is right about the end of the discs end in 2007. So,
yeah.
Our last herald of this deep dive is Galactus's 12th, Stardust, who first appeared in January 2005 in the first issue of the Stormbreaker Ballad of Beta Ray Bill limited series, written by Mike Oeming and Dan Berman, with art by Andrea DeVito. Here, Galactus appears and consumes the planet New Corbin, but the Corbinites have a protector, Beta Ray Bill. Although he's unable to stop Galactus, who...
And Scuttlebutt, too, Steve, an important protector.
And Galactus has a new herald with him, Stardust, this silvery, aquatic, almost ghostly, I guess female, although androgynous at best, alien with enough power to go toe-to-toe with Beta Ray Bill. But their conflict provides cover for several Corbinite ships to steal away. But here's the thing. Stardust worships her master like a god and zealously carries out her duties like a ritual. She views it as an honor to be eliminated by Galactus and even goes after and hunts down any survivors that escape to make sure that the whole race is wiped out, which is not good for these fleeing Corbinites, and pits her again against Beta Ray Bill and Alpha Ray Antonio, or whoever that is. Taylor 2. Issue 3 has a great homage to the Thor Silver Surfer cover with them fighting, but it's Bill and Stardust, which is cool. But it's almost issue-long battle in the third issue. Stardust opens up a black hole-like rift to a cosmic hell to send Bill into, but instead, an evil cosmic being comes out, and Bill and Stardust have to team up to both survive and to get out of there.
So funny that, like, in another dimension or from wherever they're at, and they look a lot like an attractive woman in a bikini. And, like, out of all the crazy shapes to choose, like, that's the one. But this was a real fun, like, my recommendation is you stop at issue 5.
Yeah.
Like, the ending really made me, not angry, but confused and sad.
Yeah, it's like another reality. It's like Bill in the afterlife or something. Anyway, so then the Annihilation Abnett and Lanning Penn cosmic event hit the stands the following year after the Beta Ray Bill series. Annihilation came in 2006, and that's where we choose to end this exploration of Galactus's first appearances of his heralds. But using this as a benchmark, because overall it really rebooted Marvel Cosmic in general. Some characters acted really out in character. Some things were swapped around. Some things were like don't ask, don't tell about like continuity and whatnot. And things just started over and built from there and built into a lot of cool stuff too. No doubt. But it was a big turning point and change up for Galactus's heralds, particularly because in that event, Galactus becomes enslaved by Annihilus. The Silver Surfer renews his oath and becomes Galactus's soulless herald again. We see the Fallen One as Thanos's herald, and he dies, but Thanos preserves his ashes and power in an urn. Then Drax kills Thanos. The Airwalker dies again. Stardust dies. And Redshift dies. You die, she dies, everybody dies. So they really
killed the house. Think anyone was really crying about a lot of those characters. Redshift.
Well, yeah, maybe there's some super fan out there, but they don't have many issues to collect.
Yeah, Kevin's desperately waiting for the Marvel Legends Redshift.
Yeah, like... we joked before about something like that, and then years later, like the Adam X Extreme fan found us, and I was like, I knew they were out there.
I got my Herald's mini mates. All right, so that's our look at Galactus's Herald's in order of service, from the Fallen One to the Unknown Renaissance Time One, the Silver Surfer, both Airwalkers, Fire Lord, the Asgardian Destroyer, Terax the Tamer, with Dazzler and Rom stepping in to lend a hand when Terax got out of hand, Nova, Morg, Redshift, the Invisible Boy, Stardust, and of course, the Golden Oldie. All right. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks, Kevin. Next up is our episode 450. You know what to expect with that, right?
That sounds like a special occasion.
Adventures of Mickey Mouse number 450. Yeah.
Not as special as 400 or
20,000 AD.
All right. Any other final words on the Heralds?
Yeah, it was a good gimmick. Yeah, I like a good gimmick. I mean, you know, we're all going to have ones we enjoyed more. I like probably Silver Surfer, Nova, and Terex are the ones that always leap to mind.
Yeah, I got to put in some Morg, too, just because of the time period. You know, it's that 90s. Even though he doesn't go on to a lot of great stories after, you know. But, yeah, Terex, yeah, he's very memorable. And he always gets beat up by the New Warriors, too. So, you know. Yeah, I wouldn't say he's like the Wrecking Crew, but he showed up more than I would have expected.
Well, I like that they make it clear that he's not the smartest Herald.
Yes.
So, you know, he's a big dumb guy with an axe. Like, you can get behind that.
Right, until Galactus gives it all up and opens up an all-you-can-eat buffet on the same block as Fin Fang Foom Soup Emporium. Make mine Marvel. Later.